Totally Football Show. Today, move over General Custer and whoever got Theresa May that tribal dancing photo op as Jose takes his place in the pantheon of tactical triumphs, battering Spurs 0-3. We survey the post-game damage and look forward to the weekend as United visit Burnley and so much more. There's shout-outs to own goals, much love for the Deuce, and we try and squeeze on board the hipster bandwagon that is Scottish football. All that plus the biggest possession controversy since Linda Blair and the Crucifix in the Totally Football Show. Jose Mourinho there, after his tactical victory Monday night at Old Trafford. Thanks to Brian Austin Kenny for that. Yes, what a dramatic start to the week in football land with Spurs going up to Old Trafford and winning 3-0 over Man United. We've got an awful lot to talk about today with that, with midweek Carabao Cup, with loads of other things like the weekend. We've got Tom Williams in, author of Do You Speak Football?
Hello, James.
James Horncastle.
That is I.
Good to have you back.
Good to be back.
Right. James has also been appearing on the Golazzo show this week.
Uh-huh.
What a terrific show that was with the excellent Richard Hughes.
Yeah.
In which we discovered that he'd had Cristiano Ronaldo sent off for headbutting him.
Yeah.
Mm.
Didn't sound very nice.
No.
We've also had Atalanta tweeters in the meantime.
Have we? What did they say?
Because I think they were pleased that someone acknowledged their initiative whereby they send every newborn baby in Bergamo an Atalanta shirt.
Oh,
get
well,
them
done
early.
To you. Yeah. Right, cool. Did they send any gear?
Not so far.
Right.
I'm still awaiting my own kind of baby kit, which I would obviously wear on this podcast.
Just take a second with that mental image. All right. I tell you what does sound nice. Duncan Alexander, Chief Data Officer at Opta.
Am I?
Are you not? What's your title there?
I've got lots of different titles.
Come on then.
I think currently I'm VP, which is quite American, but VP of Data Editorial Analytics and Innovation.
Bang. So you're the front line of breaking new stat ground.
That's right, yeah.
XG Vanguard. Was your baby.
Not my baby, but I was one of the midwives that made sure it came into the world.
What's coming down the kind of statistical fallopian tube?
I think the things that allow us to understand, go beyond possession, shall we say. So things like sequences.
It's funny you might mention that because possession was a big and controversial topic in Monday's show. We'll come on to that later on. I know you're itching to talk about it and you, listener, to hear about it. But we got so much to unpack, first of all, from Monday's clash at Old Trafford. Spurs doing that 3-0 win. Another fine away performance, first of all, for Tom. Tottenham, who began to put these together away at Chelsea, away at Liverpool last season. No, this was good.
No, absolutely. They've historically had struggles at various grounds like Stamford Bridge and Old Trafford. And to put that into context, 13% of the goals they've ever scored at Old Trafford came in 2 minutes and 13 seconds on Monday.
You're kidding. 13% of all the goals they've ever scored at Old Trafford.
In the Premier League.
In the Premier League.
Which is a long time. Yeah. Came in 2 minutes and 13 seconds, which kind of shows how the fortunes of Manchester United and Tottenham have switched around recently.
Yeah. Well, Harry Kane, who opened the scoring, called this win a big statement. A big statement saying what, Tom Williams?
Saying that Spurs are now capable of beating their big rivals, which is not something that they've been particularly good at in the last few seasons. I think in their last 13 games against their fellow Big Six teams, they've only won two. So, and I think that's been seen as an area where Spurs need to make progress if they're going to become serious contenders. Because we know what they can do against the weaker teams.
Right. Are you now moving them into the serious contenders bracket?
Yeah, I mean they've been there for the last couple of seasons, haven't they? But I think this is a sign of progress, and it reminded me of the sort of performance we used to see from United, in that they wouldn't play particularly well, that they'd be under the cosh a bit, which Spurs were in the first half, but then the quality they have would take them beyond their opponents very quickly.
Right.
And that's what we saw from Spurs. And it was quite un-Spursy in that respect, but perhaps a new Spursy.
Right. Quality.
It's like Pochettino went in at half time to his dressing room and said, "Lads, it's Man United."
What delicious irony, if that were the case. Well, a terrific performance by Spurs. And of course, Lucas Moura, who went waltzing through Man United for the third goal. Of course, almost more of the drama happened after the final whistle with that fairly remarkable post-game press conference in which Jose Mourinho vaunted his tactical and strategic triumph in this game. Tactical superiority comes in all shapes and sizes, of course, Duncan. And in United's case, it involves them having a worse goal difference than Cardiff, who haven't scored since April.
That is true. Confusing, but true. To defend Mourinho slightly, I mean, you know, United did play pretty well in the first half. Their XG in the first half was 0.76 compared to Spurs' 0.13. So, yeah, he won the first half, if you want to say it like that.
Their XG was 0.76 and Spurs was
0.13, so Spurs didn't really threaten.
Oh, OK, right.
Yeah. Second half was a different story.
Well, this is, I guess this is the ideal application for an XG man like yourself. Mm. You were people to take their chances, United would have won this game? Is that what you're saying?
It would have probably been a draw, I think. So really? the final totals were 1.5 for United and 1.3 for Spurs, which is, you know, close enough to being a low scoring draw. Really, Spurs were just really clinical in the second half. But I thought it was interesting the way Mourinho basically came out after the game and said, he actually said premierships. He said, I've won three premierships, which is quite telling because obviously it hasn't been called the premiership for nearly 10 years.
Really?
And two of the three he did win were premierships, right, which kind of shows how long ago it was and, you know, yesterday's man and all that.
Right. Well, yes, certainly his whole approach in the press conference didn't seem very tactically wise. For a man who used to basically have the press eating out of his hand, they were almost openly mocking him in this one, Tom.
Yeah, but there's been a big shift in terms of attitudes towards Mourinho, both from the media and I think just from the general public, because when he first arrived in England, we were all so charmed by him. You know, this debonair, very, very handsome, smooth-talking guy. And when he came up with these, you know, these curious sound bites, it felt like everything was part of a carefully constructed Machiavellian plan. And I think what we've learnt about Mourinho over the years that have followed is that often he says things without really thinking about them too much. I mean, clearly that three premierships line is something he's been sitting on for a while and waiting for Arsene Wenger to disappear so he can actually use it.
Right.
But actually,
Wenger, who won three,
but who was a specialist in failure, of course. This way of operating Mourinho has, we're all so familiar with it now. And, you know, we're not quite where things were in that disastrous second season at Chelsea last time around. But there's definitely a sense that things are unravelling. And as then, he's doing what he does when faced with this sort of situation, just lashing out quite blindly, and it doesn't make particularly great... I mean, it makes fantastic viewing, but if you're a United fan or a United director or a United player, probably not so much.
All right. Well, there's a lot of talk that these are now the end days. Paul says, can you start doing a totally Mourinho show? Please, all Mourinho, no filler. We can't really, Paul. But we'll just get one more thing then, James. Is this kind of... is buzz cut on the horizon? Are we... In much as Van Gaal lived with Mourinho's shadow, is he now basically living with, I don't know, Pochettino or Zidane's shadow daily?
I think it's curious. It always smacks of desperation when someone ends up pointing to past achievement rather than future problem solving. He didn't seem to have any ideas as to how United could come out of this. Tried a few different things in that game, playing Ander Herrera as a right back, which I think took a lot of people by surprise. But again, with Mourinho, I think what's... For someone who seemed to have all the answers, particularly at the beginning of his career, and you know, going through those initial spells in England, Italy, and Spain, to now to seem to have no answers whatsoever, and just resort to this kind of histrionics of communication and showmanship, like at the end of the game, going over to the fans and making a real point of, look at me, I'm going to applaud these.
De Canio-esque, yeah. Some people felt.
Yeah, and I think that's all he's got at the moment. You know, he is the Wizard of Oz behind the, you know, behind the curtain, you know.
Right, nice. I'm just going to say, has anyone actually seen that film?
You've seen
that?
Yeah.
Okay. Just want to check out
Michael Cox
Monday's controversy.
Hasn't. Double yeah. Bill with The Matrix. It was good that day.
Yeah. This weekend, Man United go from Lucas Moura to Turf Moura as they travel to Burnley. Burnley, who've had a rotten start to the season, yet to win a game this campaign. They've conceded 7 goals so far. They've got Europa League coming up again this Thursday evening at home to Olympiakos. Chances of Burnley inflicting a third straight defeat?
I think it's going to be tough given what we've seen from them this season. If it was the Burnley of last year, without these European commitments and some of the injuries that they've got, then I think they would be a real banana skin for United and would send them into deeper crisis. But given that they've conceded, what, 7 goals in their last 2 games?
Last 2, yeah.
That kind of defensive solidity and resilience on which they kind of build their game doesn't seem to be there at the moment.
And, I mean, this game seems a bit like the battle of the teams who probably both finished a bit higher last season than they probably should have based on underlying... Yeah. Get an acronym for that. I mean, Burnley, like a lot of teams that qualify for the Europa League, that's a big achievement, and they seem to be a bit grumpy that they actually then have to go and play Europa League matches. They've actually not made a change to their starting 11 yet this season, which seems strange given the number of games, whereas Man United have made the most.
Anyway, Spurs, meanwhile, join Liverpool, Chelsea and Watford on maximum points. How many times has the English top flight season ever seen 4 teams start with 3 wins from 3, Duncan?
3. 3 times.
This is only the third time.
I looked this up on Monday, expecting it to be fairly common, and it's really not.
1903-04.
Yeah.
When it was Sunderland, Sheffield Wednesday, Man City and Sheffield United. And once in 1932-33, Villa, Derby, West Brom and Portsmouth.
Yeah. So it is very rare to see 4 teams start with maximum points. But
clearly,
I think Chelsea, Tottenham and Liverpool, perhaps unsurprising, but Watford are the left field option there.
Well, indeed. 2 of that quartet are facing each other. Top of the table clash. Claxon will be dealing with that after this.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Big game coming up for Spurs this weekend as South Korea take on Japan in the Asian Cup final. Victory for South Korea in that game, etc. and so on, Sun can get to come home again, basically. The other, of course, massive fixture for Tottenham Hotspur is Sunday at 4 o'clock as they visit Vicarage Vicarage Road and Watford. Pow. Hey, Watford haven't won a game against Spurs since 1994. But they haven't started the season with 3 straight wins since before that. So what are the chances? Do you fancy them, Tom? Who wants to answer this question?
I can answer this, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it'll be an interesting test for Watford because obviously they have been impressive so far. They've overperformed, I think, compared to, well, in terms of the table. You look at the teams they've beaten, 2-0 at home to Brighton, 3-1 at Burnley. Burnley, we know, who have got a few issues with Europa League qualifiers. And then 2-1 last time out at home to Palace, which was probably the most eye-catching result of the 3. Their next 4 Watford are Spurs at home, Man United at home, Fulham away and then Arsenal away. So I think we'll probably get a better idea of where they really are once they've come through that. But yeah, they've been fun to watch, Watford, so far. Roberto Pereira is sort of stepping into the void left by Richarlison and has been really impressive so far. And yeah,
does
I think
that mean that after what, in a few weeks' time, we won't really see or hear anything more of Pereira. Yeah,
yeah.
All right.
Quite possibly.
The big story, some say though, about the Hornets is their defensive solidity. Ooh. Duncan.
Yeah, I mean, just talking about XG again, they, along with Liverpool, obviously Liverpool's defence has got a lot of praise so far.
Uh-huh.
And they're the only other team, other than Liverpool, to have a XG conceded of under 2. So, I mean, which is really good in 3 games. And, yeah, I think points to the fact that this could be a more sustainable run from Watford than it looks like.
Here's a question, quickly then, from Johnny, who says, this weekend, Watford fielded the same 11, and more interestingly, named the same bench as the previous week in the Premier League. That got me thinking, what is the longest a team has gone without changing a player in the starting 11? Just in league games. Could one of you stop off at your Mind Palace and dig out an answer for today's show, please? Everyone looks at you, Duncan.
I went into the Mind Palace, definitely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it turns out that the longest run of consecutive starting 11s is Birmingham City back in 2010 when they named the same team for 12 Premier League games in a row, which is a lot. Especially when
it's a lot.
It includes Roger Johnson in that team. So,
right.
But that was in his glory
Hull
period.
Do you remember Hull like a couple of seasons ago when they only had 7 players and were forced to keep fielding them? Plus
yeah,
a couple of spectators.
They didn't make a substitution to the 3rd game, I think, this season. But they're not quite. They're Burnley are next. 2015, they did 10 in a row.
Okay. Interesting. Which of these 2 teams, if either, is going to be on maximum points come Sunday evening?
Watford.
Really? It's a big Watford upset.
I mean, just to build on what Tom was saying about Roberto Pereira, if you look at what happened United in that first half, they were quite good at getting at Spurs, particularly down the right-hand side. of Spurs' defence. I thought Shaw Lingard did quite well there. And, you know, the Spurs do look quite narrow at the moment. You know, aside from Lucas Moura, they don't have any kind of natural width aside from that provided by their fullbacks, which I think would leave Trippier maybe needing a little bit of a hand against the in-form Pereira.
Mm.
So, yeah. You know, I think Watford have got a decent chance.
Okay. Among other teams on maximum points are Liverpool, who travel to the King Power this Saturday. Early kickoff for them, taking on a Leicester side where Claude Puel has had two wins in a row. So that's good after that, you know, uncertainty over his prospects. They won midweek against Fleetwood. Jamie Vardy will be out with suspension. Did you see Christian Fuchs?
Oh, belter. Mm.
Yeah, he's
Rashid
keen
Ghazal
for everyone to see
scored a nice
it.
Goal as well.
Who did, sorry?
Rashid Ghazal.
Oh, I didn't see that one. Mm. How was that one?
Sort of cuts in from the right. I think he plays a 1-2 and then curls one left-footed top left corner from about 20 yards out.
Very nice. A game you'd expect them to win.
Yeah.
To be fair.
Yeah, I mean, they changed the team up, as, you know, the Premier League teams will want to do, but nice to get a big bouncy win under your belt all the same.
Duncan.
I think the absence of Vardy is going to be quite big. He's got a particularly good record against the big six in the Premier League. Mm. He's one of those players that, you know, is definitely not a flat track bully. Definitely turns up against the big teams. So the fact he's out, and Liverpool's defence just looks impregnable, really. Alisson is currently on for one of my favourite Premier League records, which is most games without conceding from the start of your Premier League career.
That's one of your favourite stats.
Yeah, because it's held by the oft-forgotten Alex Manninger.
Yes.
Who played six games without conceding at the start of his Premier League career.
Alex Manninger of Arsenal and Siena and Liverpool. Yeah, for a season. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lovely chap, by the way, Alex Manninger.
Uh-huh. If you ever had no, I never had any dealings with him.
Great.
Harry Maguire, though, with those thunder strikes. It's, you know, it's slab head not going to cause some major problems for this Liverpool defence in the Alisson back line.
I think if we can see Alisson chip the ball over Harry Maguire, we know that he's basically the best player in the history of football. So. Yeah.
We did see Brighton cause Liverpool one or two scares from set pieces. Yeah, if you've got Maguire and Johnny, you know, maybe Johnny Evans up there, you know, could be some fruit without, I mean, if that's the way you're going to be looking for goals without Jamie Vardy.
It's the Premier League.
Anything can happen.
Anything literally can happen. Yeah. Certainly, you could see any number of results at the clash a little bit later that afternoon at Stamford Bridge, where Chelsea are taking on Bournemouth. Over the last three seasons, no team has beaten Chelsea at Stamford Bridge more often than any has Bournemouth. Isn't that remarkable?
Yeah, two wins in the last three visits, including a 3-0 win in January, which I'd completely forgotten about. And then looked it up and there it was. Yeah. And Bournemouth doing well. Won their first two games and then came from 2-0 down to draw 2-2 against Everton last time out. So a bit of a free hit for them, I think, this. And I think given the record they've got, you know, they'll go into the game with confidence. I mean, you'd expect Chelsea to dominate possession as they've done in all their games to date, as we saw them do against Newcastle. But it might be an interesting one.
All right, Bournemouth, another of these teams that likes going with an unchanged lineup under Eddie Howe. On the subject of their brilliant start, we had Richard Hughes in on Golazzo this week, and afterwards I asked him about that, and it turns out it's perhaps not as impressive as it sounds.
The corresponding fixtures from last season, which interesting who you replaced Cardiff with, but obviously one of the teams that got relegated, we actually accumulated 7 points from these the same fixtures we've had. And worryingly, with Chelsea upcoming at the weekend, and obviously worryingly, we won there on the end of January 3-0. So we'll have to go some to repeat last year's total from these particular four games.
Well, this is a really interesting clash up against Maurizio Sarri, who Eddie Howe has spent a lot of time scouting.
Well, yeah, we went to see Maurizio when he was at Empoli and spent a couple of days there watching his training. And it was obvious from the first time they met, there was a really good bond, a lot of similar ideas on football between the two. It was something, a relationship that grew even last season. We had a pre-season friendly against Napoli. One of the most entertaining games I saw live last season was Bournemouth 2, Napoli 2 in pre-season.
Mm.
Played by two managers who want to play football on the front foot and try and dominate possession of the ball as well. Not always possible, of course, and it made for a really good end-to-end game.
Richard Hughes was in very interesting form as usual. And you can hear more, indeed, from him, former Atalanta player, now head of recruitment for Bournemouth, in Golazzo.
Listeners, here's another podcast you want to check out from us here at Muddy Knees Media. The Bradley Wiggins Show is back with you throughout the 2018 Love Welter.
Geraint just has been concentrating on what he's been trying to do, you know, win the Tour de France. The last month he was occupied with that. And all of a sudden he comes back from the Tour de France and everyone wants to know what he thinks about certain topics. And it's one of them things, if you haven't got a strong opinion on it either way, he's the Tour de France winner now and everyone wants to know his view on certain things like he's some sort of messiah.
Join Brad and a host of guests as they discuss the final Grand Tour of the season and all the latest news from the world of cycling. That's the Bradley Wiggins Show from Eurosport, available every Monday on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.
Hello, Danny Reeves, who's fully expecting Duncan to spend the majority of today's show nailing this possession discussion. We'll get to that very shortly, Danny. May I just say that if you've been enjoying the sumptuous tones of James Horncastle today, you'll be pleased to know that he's going to be in both of our upcoming live shows.
Apparently, yeah. I thought it was just like a three-man show with you and two others, but I've been drafted in.
What, are you saying you're now a co-host? Ben, is that what's happening here? Is this how it begins?
No.
Am I off to my holiday dasher, waved off by Horncastle at the station?
It's one of those black Volgas waiting to take you off.
Yeah. Damn. Well, these two shows, which are going to be bristling with tension, clearly, Monday the 24th of September, will be at the Queen Elizabeth Hall on London's South Bank, along with Michael Cox and yourself, Duncan.
Yes, indeed.
Team Jimbo.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, we'll see.
Tickets, southbankcentre.co.uk. And then a week or so later, Totally Football will be totally live at the Royal Northern College of Music on Friday the 5th of October. Rory Smith and Daniel Storey will be there. And I don't know, it might just be one of us by that point, James, depending on what happens at South Bank. SeeTickets.com, that's S-E-E, for your ticketing needs. Tom, I want to hear about French football. Tell me, PSG are off to a great start. And they play Nîmes. They play Nîmes this weekend. Arcadio Iniesta, that's a great name, says, can we have a mention of Nîmes? Tick. They've had a great start to the season. First time they've been in Ligue 1 for 26 years. And they won their opening two against Marseille and Angers. Wow. Then they lost last week to Toulouse. But still, hosting PSG, how about that?
Yes, great story. Promoted from Ligue 2 alongside Reims last season, two very attacking teams. And Nîmes have managed to hold on to the players who brought them up, among whom features Umut Bozok, their centre-forward, who scored 24 goals last season. And they've been really entertaining so far. Really sort of slapdash opening win over Angers, 4-3. And then they did a job against Marseille in their second game. And then lost at Toulouse last time out. So, right. Yeah, decent return to the elite for Les Crocodiles.
It be never mind the Bozok for PSG then this weekend?
I mean, PSG already looking in ominously decent form. They've scored three goals in each of their games so far. Last time out against Angers, we had Mbappe, Neymar and Cavani starting together for the first time since the World Cup. And they each scored lots of nice interplay, particularly between Neymar and Mbappe. And we got an indication of what Thomas Tuchel is going to try and do with PSG this season. He set them out with a back three and wing-backs and Neymar in a number 10 role behind Mbappe and Cavani. It didn't really work, so he changed tack at half-time and switched to a 4-2-3-1. They looked a bit better, but a sign of how he wants to evolve PSG's style.
Right. Champions League draw coming up Thursday afternoon. It's going to be very interesting to see whose pot they end up in or who ends up in their pot, rather. RM says, can you shed some light on Strootman to Marseille? Weren't United after him a few years ago? Yes. This was an interesting move, not least for the way Marseille announced it, James.
Yeah, this was quite good. I liked it. It was like a fortnight.
Intro, basically.
Intro, yeah.
It was really neatly done.
Yeah, Strootman parachuting into Marseille's training ground.
Are you on Fortnite, James? What's your handle?
I'm not, I'm afraid. Yeah, I have little time to do this. I think if I did start this, I wouldn't be able to stop. And yeah, it would probably be a breaking point.
I did start Fortnite, but did get stopped very, very rapidly by all the other people who just wait.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a generational thing, I think. Mm. Yeah. Have you played, Duncan?
I haven't, no. I've seen it.
Tom?
No.
No, it's brutal.
Right.
A lot of people, actually, by the way, out there will be going, you know, the way you felt about them not watching The Matrix. We feel about you Not playing Fortnite, but yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, Kevin Strootman.
Yes, Marseille.
It was a bit of a surprise because the transfer window is closed in Italy, so it's not like Roma could go and get anyone else, although they have signed quite a few midfield players this summer. Stephen Nzonzi came on more or less deadline day. They've got Cristante, who they paid $30 million for. Ante Coric, who's a kid who they've got high hopes for. But Strootman is a very popular guy with
Roma
fans.
They called him the washing machine. No?
Yeah, because Rudy Garcia gave this. It's quite common in France, no, to call a player washing machine. You give him a bad pass and he cleans it up. And,
all right.
And
should have gone to Ross then, shouldn't he?
Hey.
But, yeah, I mean, there's this feeling that Strootman perhaps wasn't the player he was after the terrible knee injuries that he suffered. He had a couple of relapses. He was still a very good player, though, but maybe didn't have the same kind of mobility that he had before then.
Right. Marseille struggling a bit. No, they didn't manage to get Balotelli, who they were expecting to sign, and not a good star for them.
Yeah, their recruitment has been quite odd, Marseille, in that they've been chasing a grand attaquant, a big forward, for the last two
I think we all
summers.
Got that one,
yeah, just in case anyone... Yeah.
We speak football.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thought they were going to get Balotelli, spent the whole summer speaking to him and his people, and then finally decides to stay at Nice, so they're going into a second successive season with Kostas Mitroglou and Valer Germán as their only centre-forwards, which is clearly an issue. But they've got this fantastic array of midfielders now. I mean, Strootman's come in. He's probably going to play alongside Luis Gustavo, who was probably Marseille's standout player last season. You've got Dimitri Payet. You've got Florian Thauvin. You've got Lucas Ocampos. Morgan Sanson. Maxime Lopez. So this really impressive collection of midfielders and literally, or almost literally, no strikers. And they are at Monaco on Sunday night in the first big shock of the Ligue 1 season, and they're coming off the back of a 2-2 draw at home to Rennes. Marseille came back from 2-0 down, so and Monaco not in great form either. Right. So
you call a big match in France un choc?
Un choc means like a clash, basically.
Okay.
C-H-O-C.
Right, interesting. Bordeaux won't be being managed by Thierry Henry in the foreseeable future. His people are saying it's because he didn't feel they were big enough for him. And they're saying that's because he asked for too much money. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I think timing is something that worked against both parties in this, in that Bordeaux are in the process of being sold to an American investment firm, General American Capital Partners, by M6, the French TV channel who've owned Bordeaux for the last few years. And Henri had certain expectations in terms of his salary, in terms of recruitment, and the decision makers at GACP weren't all that hot on him. I think it's one thing Henri sort of trying to sell himself to French directors, but I think for the new people coming in, they're looking at a guy who's got zero
charisma.
Zero managerial experience, right, yeah. And so they were a little bit apprehensive. So yeah, Henri is not going to be managing Bordeaux anytime soon, and they don't seem too pressed about appointing a replacement for Gus Poyet. Suggestion seems to be that it'll be after the international break when we see their new manager come in.
Bordeaux's loss is in-game car-based advertising gain, I would suggest. Friday evening on the continent. It's all about Milan-Roma, James, isn't it? That's going to be big.
I mean,
it should be really spectacular the way those teams are playing.
Yeah, it's a great antipasto for the weekend ahead. Milan played well in spells against Napoli. Scored some beautiful goals, I think, more than anything. And Roma, as we saw in another fantastic game on Monday night against Atalanta, really went hell for leather in the second half to
3-1 down to get 3-3.
Yeah.
And Eusebio Di Francesco breaking his hand on the dugout. Did he break it?
He's had to have surgery on it.
Anyway, that should be fun. That's Friday, and then there's all sorts of other fun from Serie A, which includes, is it Parma Juventus or Juventus Parma?
It's Parma Juventus.
Parma Juventus back at the Tardini, which is a match redolent with history. But, you know, for more of that kind of chat, listen to our Golazzo all about Parma's history. You'll find that easily
enough. And Gervinho
may well be taking the field against Big Chris. So each side deploying their star signings. Interesting. Now, elsewhere, we've discovered that SPL, Scottish Premier League, is the new hipster league, Duncan.
Is it?
Which kind of means it no longer is, actually, if we're aware of that.
That is true, actually, yeah. Mm.
But producer Ben is way ahead of us anyway, and he has already spoken to Andrew Slaven, who this week on the Totally Scottish Football Show, our sister podcast, has been chatting up the first Old Firm derby of the season. I know that usually these things are very much... they've been very much one-way traffic of late, haven't they, since Brendan Rodgers went there. But perhaps not this time, as Andrew explains.
Yeah, it's one of those where you can't really tell what's going to happen, which has probably been the case the past 2 years since Brendan Rodgers has been at Celtic. It's always been a kind of, oh, Celtic should breeze past this. There's been a couple of occasions when Rangers have pushed Celtic. I remember last season when it was Rangers went one up, then two up against Celtic near the end of the season. And then Edson Edouard, who Celtic have signed this summer, popped up with a last-minute winner for Celtic. It was a great game to watch, but this is certainly a game that has all the components for a perfect Old Firm derby.
Andrew, Brendan Rodgers has had things pretty much his own way since he rocked up in Glasgow, but it really does seem like a changing mood over there at Celtic. What's gone wrong?
Yeah, he hasn't really had his way when it comes to the transfer market. There was the whole fiasco with Dedryck Boyata, who was rumoured to be going to Fulham after his World Cup performances for Belgium. But that didn't quite pan out. His agent threw the toys out the pram. And it's kind of, unfortunately for Celtic, kind of caused quite a stir for Brendan Rodgers. And subsequently, the fans have kind of booed Dedryck Boyata at the weekend. But also today, it looks like Moussa Dembele could be going to Lyon for a 15 million plus deal. That's what's been reported. But that he's been one of the, you know, superstars of Celtic since Brendan Rodgers came in. He arrived from Fulham for just under 400,000, which at the time everyone was like, wow. He had clubs like Chelsea, Arsenal looking at him. It was a massive coup at the time. But like all good things at Celtic, they do move on. And I think Dembele probably felt this was his time to leave. But it would be such a bad time for Brendan Rodgers to lose his star striker just before a Celtic Rangers match.
Andrew, Rangers and Celtic and this narrative between Brendan Rodgers and Steven Gerrard, of course, gets all the headlines. But why else is Scottish football having a bit of a renaissance at the moment?
Oh, well, it's just because you have so many really hilarious stories, but also fantastic games. If you watch the Rangers Motherwell game last week, it was just a great game to watch, and it was end to end. It seems like there's no defence really in Scotland, so you've always got a great attack and plenty of goals. There's also some great characters. You've got Neil Lennon at Hibernian, you've got Derek McInnes at Aberdeen, and Hearts are going for it hammer and tong at the moment, top of the league. It's been such an exciting start to the Scottish Premiership season.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsors of Melchester Rovers. Find out more at roytheroversofficial.com.
Back to the football, Tom. Newcastle, did you see what happened to them on Wednesday night away at Forest?
I did.
Late drama.
Second season running.
That's
They've
true.
Lost to Forest in the League Cup.
So
issues with Cash.
Oh, did a player called Cash? Nicely done. Nicely done.
Forest have probably spent more money than Newcastle.
They have.
Yeah,
I can confirm that's true. 2 minutes was all it took before Forest had taken the lead, and then no goals happened until after the 90th, when Newcastle equalised. Hooray! But then Forest took the lead again and then made it 3-1, all within time added on. Extraordinary. Poor old Newcastle, eh? At least their next fixture is... Oh, it's Man City, Newcastle. Oh, dear, James. Do you know what's happened on their last three visits?
They conceded something like 22 goals.
Let's just add these up. 14.
Okay.
And they've only scored one.
It's not as bad as I thought then, so...
Right. Yeah. Well, okay. Do you know how many of those 14 were scored by Aguero?
I'm probably going to say something like all of them.
Yeah. Nine of those goals. He got a hat-trick in the 3-0 win, 5 in the 6-1 win, and just one in the 5-0 win.
He's actually got 14 against Newcastle, which is the most by any player against a specific club for one club. He's actually scored as many goals against Newcastle in the Premier League as Robinho scored goals in the Premier League. Which one of those was the better signing for the City?
Oh, is this a trick question?
It's not a trick question. Okay. I think the answer is Aguero.
Okay. All right. perhaps in those other games he wasn't up against Rafa Benitez's trademarked bold new formation, James?
The 10-0.
Yeah.
It's very innovative. Yeah, pretty damn negative. But yeah, what else are you going to do with that group of players against this kind of team?
Have a go?
No, I don't think they've got the same players as, say, Wolves have. I mean, a lot of people are saying, oh, why doesn't everyone have the same approach as Nuno did last weekend? But Wolves have just got better players. And players who can kind of approach the game in that manner. Newcastle don't. It's no surprise that they've lost to Forest, because unfortunately they've still got a championship looking squad.
No,
but in fairness to Newcastle, I mean, they almost got a result against Chelsea. You know, Chelsea needed a penalty to take the lead. Newcastle equalised, albeit after Olivier Giroud had been elbowed in the face, and then it took an own goal for Chelsea to win. And I think if you look at Newcastle's results in the league so far, they lost the first home game at home to Spurs, hit the woodwork twice, you know, came close to getting a point there, squandered a stoppage time penalty at Cardiff, and then again, you know, didn't have a huge deal of luck against Chelsea. So, I mean, you know, clearly we know that there's not a huge amount of quality in that Newcastle squad, and you know, going out of the League Cup against a Championship team isn't going to help. But I don't think they've been
But meantime, that game against Chelsea at the weekend and the possession stats that we quoted brought about a real moment of controversy in Monday's pod. To wit,
possession stats aren't quite what everyone thinks they are. It's not percentage of time on the ball. It's literally just total proportion of passes, if that makes sense.
Oh, really? So possession stats is not time.
So if there's 1,000 passes in the game and Chelsea make 800, which is pretty much what happened,
they get 80%
possession. 80% of possession.
Not the amount of time they're on the ball.
Not the amount of time they're on the ball.
This is news.
You'll have to get Duncan in to justify Opta's methodology.
Well, Michael, that's precisely what we'll do now. Duncan, is that true?
It is true, yeah.
But why do you call them possession stats? Surely that's passing stats.
Because possession is about who has the ball, and this was deemed at the time. I mean, these are figures that go back to the early 2000s. So you've got to think, at the time, the only real options were this way or the man with the stopwatch.
Which is what I think everyone who I've spoken to since assumed was going on.
But I have observed men with stopwatches and women with stopwatches doing this very thing in games, and almost without fail, someone forgets to restart it or switch it at some point. So those possession stats are invariably wrong, and then they try and catch up a bit by saying, well, maybe I gave this team a bit too much time here, let's add a bit onto this team. And we actually ran some tests.
What percentage of stats that come out of Opta are actually made up or fudged to some extent?
0%.
0%.
We actually did some tests and did a stopwatch versus this passing method.
Oh, and
they basically came out about the same. So yeah. And also the other thing to point out is that although possession is one of those stats that's just everywhere, it's on all match reports and stuff, it's not, clubs have moved beyond this now. It's all about things like passing sequences and possessions in terms of, how long you hold onto the ball before it's turned over and, transitions, things like that. So it's kind of a bit of an archaic figure anyway. But, I mean, I think in terms of telling people who had most of the ball in the game, it does what it says on the tin.
Well, no, it doesn't actually.
Well, but it
gives an indication of what another stat might be. And that's fair enough. If it's a more true, more accurate representation. I do take your point, though, about the limited value of it as an analytical tool. When you were talking about the number of passes in this game, you referenced an extraordinary, was it Watford-Portsmouth game where there were only 75 passes by the home side? And you said, they almost got away with it. We need to move beyond goals as a way of deciding football matches, which I think Jose Mourinho is very much on your side.
Yeah, he was on the phone after that saying, you're a visionary. I think, people will always say stuff like, oh, I only care about goals, or that's the only stat that matters. But a football match is, the product of thousands of tiny decisions over 90 minutes. And anything you can have to kind of add a bit more insight as to what's happened and why it's happened is good.
Okay. Jorginho had more possession than Newcastle did last weekend.
No, because he had more successful passes than Newcastle, but not more passes than Newcastle.
Okay, now you confuse me again. So it's the number of passes, not successful passes.
Yeah, it's not just successful passes. It's every pass in a game. So,
but an unsuccessful pass means you lose possession.
Exactly.
At the end of it.
Yeah. So then the opposition picks the ball up.
Okay, we were doing so well until that happened. Two Pep Nolan says, I think basing possession on a number of passes is fair. What's the alternative? Do with a stopwatch, clicking at every clearance. All right, well, good of Rafa not to be defined by possession. That's quite enlightened, isn't it?
It's not everything, James.
That's so true. Right, let's have some words of wisdom then about, ooh, Crystal Palace, Southampton, in the Alan Pardew Memorial Derby. Both teams seeking to recover from a 2-1 defeat against Watford, in the case of Palace, and Leicester for Southampton. You excited about this game, Duncan?
I'm probably more excited than the two managers because they've been both pretty grumpy so far this season. Roy Hodgson not happy with Harry the Hornet, as which was well publicised, and Mark Hughes perennially disappointed with refereeing standards.
What happened with Harry the Hornet?
Hodgson was upset that Harry the Hornet last season dived, sort of implied that Zaha was a diver.
Did he do something this time?
I think he got through the game. Harry the Hornet was well behaved this time. But obviously Hodgson got very wet and there was a few photos of him sort of soaked to the skin, looking bedraggled.
Both teams got away wins in the EFL Cup. Palace at Swansea, Saints at Brighton. Brighton, who will be hosting Fulham contemporaneously with that Crystal Palace Southampton match, Saturday 3 o'clock. Curiously, Brighton have won just twice in their last 12 league matches, and both those victories have been
against Man United.
Home wins against Man United. Yeah. Ooh, Fulham are looking exciting though, aren't they, Tom?
Yes. Lost their opening two games, but I thought looked decent in both of them, and then finally got a sort of what felt like a bit of a breakthrough win over Burnley. Alexander Mitrovic has got 3 goals already.
He's got 15 since his debut. Yeah.
Since the same as Salah.
Since February, yeah.
Yeah. We've all read the Opta briefing, have we?
Have we?
it would appear so.
Fulham, we know, brought in a whole host of new players during the transfer window. 5 new players on deadline day alone. So Visser Jokanovic is clearly trying to figure out what his best 11 is. But I think what we saw from that game against Burnley is that Fulham have got a lot of firepower. It'll be interesting to see how Brighton contend with that. Brighton obviously got that fantastic win against United and then played quite well despite losing at Liverpool last time out. So, yeah, still sort of trying to figure out where they are.
OK. You're a big fan of Seri, are you?
Yes, yeah.
Jean-Michel.
I am. Big fan of Jean-Michel Seri.
Yeah.
And he scored an absolute belter against Burnley.
Yeah. Hey, Seri.
Oh, like, as in, hey, Siri, show me a great goal. There you go.
That's my phone has literally responded to that. Go away, Siri. Lovely goal.
Right.
And Joe Hart, he does a good forlorn grasp at thin air, Joe Hart. He's not one of these keepers who will just stand there and watch it go in. He usually has a go.
Right.
And I always think it adds to the quality of a strike when the keeper at least makes an effort.
Yeah.
And Hart can usually be counted on to at least fling his body in the general direction of the ball.
Mm.
And good on him.
Hey, poignant news for Fulham fans this week with Clint Dempsey, US men's national team and Fulham legend.
Deuce.
Announcing his retirement from professional football. He was, can I speak for all of us by saying he was always a favourite because of the goals he scored. He scored in 3 World Cup tournaments, scored that extraordinary goal
against Juve.
Possibly Fulham's greatest game ever at Craven Cottage against Juve. And because on much-missed television station Setanta, he once did an interview with young Alex Gordon-Martin in which this happened.
Any chance you could give us a little rendition?
Freestyle, I guess. I'd give a little something, but...
I could give you a beat if it helps you.
Yeah, give me a beat. Let's hear the beat you got. Okay. Hey.
Freestyle off the dome, I ain't my color cocaine, so I ain't home alone. I'm a ride on the chrome, got the leather two-tone. It's that boy named Clint, I'm American grown. Yeah, American flown.
Alex Gordon-Martin there. And, will Fulham be providing the beat for Brighton, I guess? Yeah. Anyway, West Ham are taking on Wolves. It's the W derby. Will West Ham get a W? Actually, you know what? There are people who suggest that West Ham are, a force waiting to happen, that Pellegrini's slowly working his magic and that Wolves maybe are going to come unstuck here. Tom, you also have a name beginning with W. You're uniquely well-placed to talk about this.
Well, we'll see about that. West Ham, similar boat to Fulham in that lots of new players and Pellegrini's still trying to fit them all into his team. I think the consensus was that they played quite well against Arsenal and caused them a few problems. I think Felipe Anderson looks like... a good signing so far. I mean, obviously, we know that he was linked to a lot of big clubs a couple of seasons ago. And
a lot of people thought he wasn't a good signing. I must admit, I had my doubts about him. But
he was quite a West Hammy sort of signing, wasn't he? But I mean, like, I've been impressed by him from what I've seen. And yeah. I think he can do some damage.
Certainly linked up well with Arnautovic at the Emirates, where West Ham maybe, you know, were unlucky not to get something more.
Hmm. And Wolves, I mean, you know, Wolves, I think we saw against City the quality they have. You know, that they're going into that game off the back of a defeat at Leicester. Obviously, there's a lot of expectation around Wolves this season and what they're going to do. I think that City game showed what we could expect to see once those players start clicking. So yeah, not an ideal game for West Ham, but I think they'll go into it with a bit of confidence after what they did at Arsenal.
Right, and what they did midweek when they beat AFC Wimbledon 3-1 in the EFL Cup with a screamer from Diop. That's two goals he scored in two games now.
Mm. One at each end.
That's very, very true.
But weren't Wimbledon in the lead for like an hour in that game despite having 10 men? Two of West Ham's goals came in the last 10 minutes. Really? So I wouldn't say that was impressive. I think it still shows there's some work to do at West Ham.
I see.
Well done, Wimbledon.
Well done, AFC Wimbledon. But who they lost.
Yeah, I know, but it was a valiant
tactically and strategically.
We need to move past goals.
Three!
Cardiff are way ahead of you on that one, Duncan. They are hosting Arsenal this weekend. Is this an actual Arsenal clean sheet in prospect?
Possibly. I mean, Cardiff have drawn two of their games 0-0. They could technically stay up having not scored. got 2 points, you know, draw the remaining games 0-0. You know, that would be Warnock's finest ever achievement, I think. I obviously a lot of people knew last season Cardiff had a terrible pass completion in the Championship. It's actually gone up in each game.
How do you determine that? Is it on the amount of time you have on the ball or what?
It's actually based on passes, so yeah. But it's actually gone up in each Premier League game so far. So if you extrapolate, they're going to be Barcelona by the end of November. Neil Warnock, he managed to beat Arsenal in the Premier League with Sheffield United in a game, if people remember, where Phil Jagielka had to go in goal and actually made a really good save from Robin van Persie late on. I always love outfielders going in goal, and hopefully we'll see some of that in this.
Okay. Cardiff, in their defence, actually did score a goal midweek in their 3-1 defeat in the EFL Cup to Norwich. Huddersfield are another team who are challenged in goal terms. And speaking of the EFL Cup, oh my word, they went to Stoke on Tuesday night, a wet and windy Stoke Tuesday night, and lost 2-0 with two remarkable goals. One was what some people are hailing as the most incredible own goal of all time. I don't know if you'd go along with that. Have you seen it?
No, 45-yard angle.
Do you remember Marco Materazzi's for Inter against Empoli?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, from the halfway line.
Is it like that?
It's slightly worse, I would say. Materazzi basically was running back towards goal, across the halfway line, and thought, I'll just chip this back to the keeper. Keeper, who in the meantime had decided to run out to collect. And, you know, the inevitable happened. Whereas Juninho, who was making his debut, so that's one to remember, from FC Groningen, he basically is trying to... He slices it, doesn't he? He's on the turn.
It's late in the game. Huddersfield are a goal behind and chasing the game. And the ball is cleared towards their own half. And Bakuna goes to wallop it clear on the volley, about 10 yards inside his own half, completely slices it. And the goalkeeper is pushed up as well to try and gather the loose ball. And he just trundles forlornly into the net. And then he reacts, Bakuna, by dropping to the ground with this very ostentatious display of cramp or injury of some kind.
Right. And opponents come up with concerned looks on their faces now.
Concerned / I mean, it's hard to tell from...
It is hard to tell.
From TV, but yeah.
Yeah, 2-0. And of course, the other goal came from...
Saido Berahino.
Wow.
913 days after his previous goal. 329 million people had been born in between those two goals, give or take a few.
Wow.
So it was heading on to 500 million people. It's quite a lot.
It is.
Like the entire United States, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah.
I've seen loads of... Because this obviously was huge news, Berahino scoring a goal. And it was not the greatest goal. I mean, it kind of bounced off his head more than anything. It was somebody else's shot, I can't remember whose, and it just kind of...
He's
like
a fox in the box, is what he thrives on those.
Right, okay. Well, I've seen loads of different metrics for, you know, measuring the amount of time it's taken him to score a goal. And the number of goals that Harry Kane has scored in the meantime is 103. That's one of them.
Yeah. 58% of the length of the First World War.
I'm sorry, more than half the First World War?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Fewer shots. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that is Stoke. But Huddersfield, who were beaten 2-0 in that clash, now must visit Everton on Saturday afternoon. With an Everton side without Jagielka, Michael Keane with his hairline fracture of the skull, and, of course, Richarlison, who was trying to give people hairline fractures of the skull with his vigorous rutting action last weekend against Bournemouth.
Yeah, I think Everton have got a bit of a defensive crisis.
Have they?
This game. Well, in terms of injuries, you know, and the like. Yeah, I think Yerry Mina is also a doubt for this game as well. Yeah, so you know, for this Huddersfield side, which is meek in attack to say the very least, might have some joy. Although I was quite perturbed as a Yorkshireman to read in Duncan's stats back that the last time a Yorkshire team went to Goodison and won was in 1999.
Really?
That's outrageous.
Certainly,
God's country.
Certainly, Huddersfield managed to lose both games against Everton last season 2-0.
Huddersfield last won at Goodison September 1937.
Oh, that's a long time ago. Duncan, you got a Huddersfield stat you want to throw?
Well, obviously, they stayed up last season with 28 goals, which equaled the Premier League record with George Graham's Leeds, another Yorkshire team. It must be a Yorkshire thing. They've only had 16 shots this season, which is the same number as Salah and Aguero. And, yeah, I mean, it's going to be, as James said, it's meek against Leek, because I don't think Everton's defence has looked particularly good so far. I think Everton fans are happy because their team are attacking and they're scoring goals, but that's probably overshadowed the, you know, the relative kind of leakiness at the back.
The Richarlison absence, Theo Walcott, for example?
Yeah, I mean, it will have an impact because he's been good. But, yeah, I think Walcott can step up.
Dominic Calvert-Lewin scored a brace in midweek.
Did he?
Yeah.
Who did they beat?
EFL
Everton?
Cup. They beat Rotherham.
Okay. Anything else we should know?
Another Yorkshire side.
Another Yorkshire side. Yeah, the Yorkshire bashing just doesn't stop.
This makes up for people in the Olympics going on about Yorkshire.
Yeah, that's
fair.
Good point. Good
point. Right. Well, tell you what, let's ramp up the drama even further by hearing what cheeky questions producer Ben is going to ask our friends at Paddy Power this week.
Thank you, Jimbo. I've got Lee Price on the line from Paddy Power, as always. Lee, let's get right stuck into things. Jose Mourinho, Man United, it's been an absolutely shocking week for them. Not that Moo is showing any ill signs of that. They take on Burnley at the weekend. Can Sean Dyche make it three defeats in a row for Man U?
Despite the nightmare week of all weeks, we actually think Mourinho will be safe this weekend. It's 8-13 for Manchester United victory, 9-2 for Burnley to win at home, despite Turf Moor being a bit of a fortress. And the Carl Anker special, Mourinho to turn up with a buzz cut, is 8-1. And I would love to see that.
And what about Moo himself? What are the odds on him lasting till Christmas, let alone the end of the season?
Despite the good news about the result this weekend, our traders aren't as confident about Mourinho's long-term future. It's odds on that he leaves this season, 2-7. Odds on that he leaves before Christmas, 4-7. And he's the 6-4 favourite to be the next Premier League manager to leave his job. Ouch.
Let's move on to better things. Watford, unbeaten in the league. Really good result in the League Cup last night. They're taking on Spurs. What are the odds on Javi Gracia getting one over on Pochettino here?
Watford have started well, but I think I'm the only one who's not getting carried away. I'd still put them in the mix for relegation, actually. They are a massive 14-1 to go down now and just 7-4 to finish in the top half. I would definitely flip those odds. As for the Spurs game, they're 9-2 to beat Spurs at home. Spurs are the favourites here, obviously 4-7 to win at Watford.
Let's move on to Cardiff. They did get a goal in midweek in the League Cup, but still very much goalless, as we've been saying, since April in league football. They're taking on Arsenal, who have a pretty ropey defence. Can you give me some numbers here on Cardiff scoring a goal, but not necessarily winning?
Yeah, Cardiff are prolific now. They've scored one goal, having notched midweek. And actually, our traders think they will score against Arsenal. I'm not sure what that says about Unai Emery, but it's odds on 4-7 Cardiff score this weekend, 6-5 that they don't.
And finally, Lee, we heard from Andrew Slaven earlier on in the show about the Old Firm derby. Give us the odds for this one.
Yeah, I'm massively excited for this one. It feels like the first Old Firm derby for quite a long time that you can't predict the result of, i.e. a Celtic win. Although that said, our traders do still make it odds on that Celtic win this weekend. They're 8-13. The draw is 3-1 and Rangers are 7-2. But with Steven Gerrard making a massive impact up there, unbeaten so far in his time in Scotland, who knows?
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. We're back on Monday when the Totally Football Show will feature Daniel Story, David Priest and Michael Cox. What are you boys up to in the meantime? Tom?
I will be in Manchester with Duncan and others.
Oh, are you going to the MCW?
The MCFWF. The Manchester Football Writing Festival.
There you go.
MFWF.
MC.
Where's this? And then we're going to the acronym festival afterwards.
Yeah.
Where you learn how to acronym stuff.
Never miss it. So we're on a panel, the Opta panel, on Monday evening. If you're in the vicinity, do join us.
Speaking of acronyms, what does Opta stand for?
No one knows. It was named after a company in the 90s, it was a management consultancy company that decided to set up a football stats arm.
And sold it to?
That then, you know, became sentient and went off and did its own thing.
Self-aware. Wow. That's fantastic. Opta. Right. So it literally doesn't, mean like optimized performance.
It does mean something, but no one can work out what it means. So, you know, feel free to suggest.
Okay. Good. And James, what have you got lined up for this weekend?
I had thought I was going to go to Parma for another Ronaldo watch.
Right.
But it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Oh, no.
So
right.
I might
actually
have a nice weekend where I can just, you know.
Although it's always nice to go to Parma, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah. Good. All right. Well, listener, whatever you're getting up to this weekend, I hope you have a splendid time. And do make sure to join us again Monday with the Totally Football Show. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And make sure you check out our other football podcasts, the revamped Totally Football League show with Caroline Barker and the brand new Totally Scottish Football Show. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really, and here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK, so that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.